Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Thanks for joining us today in advance. I know you're looking forward to the last two people we're going to talk about, so let's stay tuned for our article on creative people in business. Welcome, everyone, wherever you are. We hope that you're enjoying reading about these people and thinking about, I wonder how they became so successful. I think most of them did it by just having ideas and probably just going forth and working on their ideas. Don't you think so, Naomi?
I think so. They are already creative, but they've managed to use that creativity and become successful. They've gone forward with it. They don't just have ideas in their head. They're actually taking action.
Well, you know, I think all people really have creativity because we're all descendants of, we could say we came from God, who was the creator of the world, and we're people, and we are creator because we're like God. We have creativity. So I think sometimes it isn't that we don't have creativity, that sometimes we just don't develop it. We don't have the right environment. What do you think about that, Brandon? Don't you think everybody has creativity in them?
I think that is totally true, and it's also true that, yeah, the environments really matter. Sometimes people, maybe they don't even know they can do some things because they've never tried it or been introduced to that or been, you know, helped out to know how to do certain things. And so maybe you're looking at some of these people and maybe you can take something from them. You know, I'm thinking of Jamie Oliver, who we talked about yesterday. He wasn't the best student, but he's still very creative and can be used. So maybe you're not the best in the classroom, but you still can do many, many wonderful things.
Right. And Lois, don't you think that sometimes we are more creative when we're forced into it? I mean, sometimes we have to think of something and they think, well, let me think of something. If we don't have to do anything, sometimes we're not creative. So I think we become creative when we're forced to work for a living or try to develop something. And it's kind of part of what we have to do.
I know for me, Doris, coming to ORTV has made me more creative in a different way than maybe I thought I was, or maybe I thought that had left me behind from the time I was a child or teenager, and now it's returning, and it's good to discover that creativity again.
I think we all have it, so we need to develop it. So as we read about these people, we can develop and light up your own creativity and be bold and go ahead and be creative.
I think one of the other things that stood out to me is that while all of these people are creative, they're creative in very different ways. And so it's okay if not all of us are chefs and not all of us are singers.
You'd like to be a singer. No, you are a singer, really.
Not really.
Yeah,
but there are different ways that we can be creative and express our creativity.
Right. And so all of you think about ways that you can do what you're doing in a different way or a better way, and it will develop your creativity.
I totally agree. You know, my sister always says, you know, I don't feel like I'm too creative in some things, but she goes, one thing I really enjoy, and she's so good at it, she can make a table look wonderful before you sit down for a meal. Cooks a great meal, too, but the table looks so inviting. Well, that's creativity.
Well, some people know how to arrange flowers in a beautiful way, and you can use your creativity in so many ways. Mm-hmm. So let's read about these people that were chosen, but there's a lot of other people who are not chosen by Fast Company, and you probably know some of them yourself. But let's look at page 38 today and see who we're going to talk about. Who are we going to talk about today, Brandon?
First one today is Samuel Stupp.
Oh, who is Samuel Stupp?
He is the director at the Institute for Bio-Nanotechnology in Medicine, and this is at Northwestern University. So a bit of a technical section here, but we're going to help everyone understand it.
And we've had a lot of articles on nanotechnology, the smaller things, so small you can't even see them. And that's very important in the medical field nowadays. And so he has to be creative, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And that bio nanotechnology means it has to do with biology, with our bodies.
So we're going to have another kind of creativity today as we read about him. Let's read this article. And if you have a magazine and you're someplace where you can read out loud with us, because the more you say these words, the more it will help you remember them. So read along with us.
Samuel Stupp, Director, Institute for Bionanotechnology in Medicine, Northwestern University. Back in the 90s, when regenerative medicine was more sci-fi than reality, materials scientist Samuel Stupp had a big idea. He knew that damaged body tissue lost its ability to knit itself back together with natural biological fibers when the damage was too extensive. What if he could deploy an army of self-assembling molecules to restore the body's self-repairing powers to reverse spinal cord injuries or Alzheimer's? Since that eureka moment, Stupp, 49, has brought his vision to life. One of his many successes? Making paralyzed mice walk again by injecting them with a liquid containing nanomolecules that assemble into fibers and attract new nerve cells. Stupp thinks his nanofiber approach will become the centerpiece of regenerative medicine. We have covered the broadest range of conditions, heart disease, diabetes, Parkinson's, with a single platform, he says. That's what makes it special.
Well, when we say back in the 90s, it doesn't seem like that long ago, but, you know, we're not saying back in the 50s or the 40s or something, but back in the 90s wasn't that long ago. But that's when they started more of what they call regenerative medicine. To regenerate means to generate something that's not working and make it work again. And that's what they're trying to do now in medicine, make things that don't work, make your body work. And that's why they had all the stem cell research to put in cells that would be in your body and grow something that you need to have done. So regenerative medicine is something we've heard a lot about in the last 15 years, isn't that right?
When something is generated, it's created or made or produced, or it just goes. If it's regenerated, it means it's happening again. So that's the idea that your body grew once. So can, if it gets injured, can it grow back to the way it's supposed to be? Well, sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't right now. But
well, it sounds like science fiction. It's science fi here. Because,
right.
You know, in science fiction, anything can happen. People
right.
can grow more arms and legs than they have. Right?
Well, X-Men fans will think of Wolverine. And he's someone who, when he gets injured, he heals right away.
Right.
And so that's that idea, that sci-fi idea of regeneration.
Okay, well, Samuel Stupp, he had a very big idea, and creative people get ideas. And I'm sure you have a lot of ideas. The thing is, you have to follow through on them. Don't just get the idea, do something about it. Now, what did he know that made him think about this?
Well, he knew that damaged body tissue lost its ability to knit itself back together. And so he was thinking about this, and he had this idea. And he's talking here about natural biological fibers, and it's talking about the damage is too extensive, it's too large. So he knew that the body, you know, when there's something wrong with it, it sometimes it has a problem. It can't just heal itself. And so he came up with an idea.
Right. On a small scale, we can think about cutting your hand. If you have a small cut on your hand, it will heal up and you'll never know in another few months that
anything
happened.
You might be a little tiny scar sometimes.
Well, that's the thing. If it's deeper, sometimes you get a scar or sometimes it just won't heal the way it's supposed to. And so that's what he's talking about. Sometimes your body can't heal itself the way it's supposed to when that damage is too serious. So what can we do about that?
Well, what could we do?
Well, it says here, what if we could deploy an army of self-assembling molecules to restore the body's self-repairing powers? In other words, and another example here is to reverse spinal cord injuries or Alzheimer's.
Well, that would be something terrific. And then, you know, there wouldn't be any sickness if you could do that.
Right. It's like he wants to find a way to help the body do what it tries to do, but sometimes isn't capable of doing.
Right,
so
when you deploy an arm, it's just like moving soldiers around to different places, right?
Yeah, he's comparing these molecules to soldiers, and he's sort of sending them into battle heal you.
Let's move them around, right?
Well, we often talk about that like vitamins. If you take vitamin C and then you get cold germs in your body, then they're supposed to go out and fight those germs, you know, and get rid of them. So these little things going around, you deploy an army for your immune system to keep it strong and to rebuild And so many times things are happening in our body we don't even realize. We've ruined something, but it gets mended by itself because we ate the right food or something. Our body's a wonderful thing, really.
Mm-hmm. It sure is. And, you know, I was thinking, boy, they're really looking to attack something huge here with spinal cord injuries and also Alzheimer's, because Alzheimer's has touched my family. My grandmother died of it. My paternal grandmother died of it. And it was really sad, particularly the last 10 years of her life. It also took her brother with the same disease, but much quicker than her.
Well, the thing they found out with Alzheimer's is that it's not that people don't have memories. The memory is still there in their brain, but the nerves or the receptors that go into the brain can't get that out. So if they could get those little receptors working, those little whatever's connectors, you want to call them, then they could get in there and tap into that memory. The memory's still there. It's not gone, but they can't get in there and find it. It's like you're on the computer, you're looking for something, and you can't find it.
Right, and we see here that he wants to find a way to repair that, the self-repairing powers, and I think that's the amazing thing, that there's something that's within us or that he can help relieve or help us to restore back to what is normal. So if someone has Alzheimer's, well, they can be helped with some self-repairing power. And this is really, I think, what's amazing about what he, about his idea.
Well, it is.
It is. And so since that eureka moment, now let's stop there a second. Basically, since he had that idea, sometimes we hear stories about people yelling, eureka, when they find an idea that really solves a problem for them. So that's sort of what happened here. Stepp had this idea and he went, whoa, that's what I want to do. And so he's been trying to bring that vision to life.
So that was his vision, you know, to bring that back. And he's had some successes, which is really good.
That's right. He certainly has. And one of his many successes, making paralyzed mice walk again. This is, like, quite amazing to me. And right. He uses an injection for that with a liquid containing nanomolecules that assemble into fibers and attract new nerve cells.
That sounds to me like what we call the stem cells, you know, that your original cells that become different parts of your body. I don't know what kind of molecules they are, but doesn't it remind you of that stem cell research?
Mm. Mm. It sounds like very promising research.
It's right. Incredible, isn't it?
If I were someone who had suffered from this kind of injury, I would be very excited reading about this.
No, I would too. I'd be glad to get a couple of injections of that, wouldn't
you? Right, because you see that it's working in the mice and you think, well, maybe it's not too long until it will be working in humans as well. So it is very, very promising. And we continue on. It says Stepp thinks his nanofiber approach will become the centerpiece of regenerative medicine. So he's really working on something big here and he's excited about it.
Well, especially if they're thinking of conditions like heart disease and diabetes. Mm. These are the things that kill most people nowadays. And Parkinson's certainly disables people, so their hands keep moving in their body and they can't stop it. And if they could stop the things that make that happen, that would be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would be. I'm thinking of it for, you know, a friend of my daughter's has a disease that this would be very, very helpful for, if this can...
Multiple sclerosis,
yeah.
All those diseases, yeah. Right. Yeah, there's so many things that would be really good. So let's just hope that he keeps working on it. The mice are being able to repair it. But, you know, they've even tried a lot of experiments by injecting certain things into horses, because when a race horse or something hurts their leg, they just shoot them because they can't walk anymore. And if they could find some ways to repair that, then these horses would, you know, and if they can do that for horses, mm-hmm. then they can do it for people. So they're using mice and horses and other things to try to help repair our body. And it would be a lot better if our bodies could work like they should, right?
Absolutely. One of the exciting things we see here is he mentions covering all of these conditions with a single platform. I think that's a really interesting concept here. Usually when we talk about cures for diseases, we're talking about something very, very specialized. But what he's talking about is basically just helping your body to heal itself.
Right.
Trying to find a way to give your body that boost that it needs to be able to work the way it should. And I really like that idea. I hope he finds more success with this.
Right. That's why I thought it sounded to me like this you know, cell search that they're doing, because the stem cells are supposed to be original cells that you have in your body, and this is some kind of cell. So we're trying to get some little tiny thing, little molecule or some kind of a stem cell or something, that will turn into whatever our body needs to repair that part. a little repair job down there that you can't do yourself. That would be much better than all these big operations that are so dangerous and they don't really help that much as far as spine and so forth like that. So I hope he has a big success, don't you?
I sure do. I'm thinking this would really help people possibly too with epilepsy, and I'd really like to see that happen.
So let's be looking for this. If you see that name come up again, read something about him and say, I've heard about it first in advance. Well, who's the next person we're going to talk about? I'm going to let Naomi talk about this person because she's quite excited about what Chris Anderson's doing.
I am. Some of you may have already heard about the TED conferences or seen videos online, and so we're going to talk about the curator of the TED conferences.
Let's read about it first.
Chris Anderson, curator, TED Conferences. At TED, every time we've listened to radical openness, we've been grateful, says Chris Anderson, 53. As chief curator of TED, the Long Beach, California conference of multidisciplinary luminaries turned viral video phenomenon, the Brit has guided it into a newly global open source phase this year. Volunteers have translated thousands of videos into 76 languages and introduced TEDx, independently organized events, that in the first year has produced an astonishing 500 gatherings in 70 countries and 35 languages. Any business advisor might have told us 10 years ago, oh, beware, you're going to dilute your brand, says Anderson. TEDx has massively enhanced the brand by showing just how widespread this desire is to be stimulated and inspired. Okay, so we are meeting Chris Anderson, and it says here that he's the curator of TED conferences. Now, usually when we think of a curator, we think about a museum.
I do. I always think of museums.
Or art gallery.
So what does a curator do?
Well, they just take care of everything there, don't they?
Just do. They oversee it and bring in special items or special exhibits.
I think that's part of the key, is that they choose what's going to be featured in the museum. And here, Chris Anderson is the one who's choosing which speakers are going to be featured for TED videos and conferences.
But why did they say here, at every time we've listened to radical openness, radical means kind of far out or not the usual, right?
It does, and it's saying here radical openness, meaning people are being very transparent, they're being open about their ideas. A lot of people are in the business world, and so you'll watch a video that they're involved in with their company or whatever, and they're giving a lot of advice, and they're very willing to share their ideas.
Well, if you're going to go to one of these conferences, it says a conference on multidisciplinary luminaries. Wow, that's a big mouthful of words there. Multidisciplinary. That means many, many different types of things. We talk about different disciplines of science and law and business and all different things. Different ones. And luminaries then would be people who are very well known or famous in that field, right?
Right. And so when you visit the TED website, you'll see the list of speakers, and you might be surprised at some of the big names and also some of the variety. You'll see one speech by a famous doctor from India, and then you'll see another speech by an American writer, and then another one from an Olympic athlete. And so you see this variety of perspectives, and it's quite interesting because they all have unique things to say.
But that's really a hard sentence for everybody to understand, because they have a conference of multidisciplinary luminaries and they turn viral video phenomenon. Now, can you explain that? That's a pretty big sentence here.
Turn viral video phenomena. So we're going to be able to view this because of the ability of technology today. So that is why later in the article we find out how many countries, how many gatherings, how many languages.
Right. So how would you say that sentence in a very common term for people who are not trying to use all those big words?
Well, they have these conferences, and now the stuff that's going on at the conferences, people can view those online. We see the word viral video. You think of a virus, it spreads. So the news of what's going on at these conferences is just spreading everywhere online, and people want to get in on what's going on.
Right. I saw one of these TED conference speeches, one of these videos that was featuring a jazz musician talking about how everyone understand certain principles of music, and he gave this really interesting demonstration. Well, all of a sudden, this video was popping up online everywhere. All of my friends were posting it on Facebook and on Twitter and so on. And so because these speeches, these sort of like just sessions of discussion and so on, because they're on video and they're online, people can share them all over the world.
So that's very open source phase this year. So now volunteers have translated thousands of videos into 76 languages. So people say, well, let's put this in Spanish and German and French and everything. So it's kind of an open source that way that everybody can share.
Right. And the other side of it that's open source is what's mentioned next. They've introduced TEDx. Now, there's the original TED conference in Long Beach, California, but now there are also TEDx conferences all over the world. I know there's some right here in our city, and these are independently organized.
So why would they put an X at the end of TED then? What does that mean?
Well, they're still connected with the original TED conferences, but they are not organized by the same people.
So they're extras. Maybe the X means extra.
Maybe.
Differentiate, maybe. I don't know. Maybe
that's
they think it's
catchy. Me, yeah. But they are independently organized, so by different things. And they have produced an astonishing 500 gatherings in 70 countries and 35 languages. Have you been to one of those?
I haven't yet. I haven't been able to make it, but I've seen some of the videos and I've read some of the feedback, and
but
it's all
have
been
in Asia,
very positive.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They do.
So they would have it maybe in one of our large conference centers here? Is
right.
that where they would be held?
And right. all in... I know the one that was in Taipei, everything was in Mandarin and English.
Okay.
Translated.
Yeah.
So any business advisor might have told us 10 years ago, be careful because you are going to dilute your brand. In other words, here's something that they are going to make it weaker. But that's not what he hasn't made things weaker, has he?
No, it's actually become very strong. People everywhere are interested. We learned earlier that it's a phenomenon. People are wanting to know what's going on. And we see here TEDx has massively enhanced the brand by showing just how widespread this desire is to be stimulated and inspired. So we see the word widespread. It's everywhere. A lot of people are interested.
So if it says TEDx, now I want the real TED. Hey, TEDx is good. Go try it out.
That's right. And I can see why they would be a little hesitant at first. The organizers of the original TED conference might say, oh, can we trust these people to organize
this?
But
they do, right?
But they decided to go ahead and take the leap of faith and trust that these other organized TEDx conferences would be good quality as well. And they were right.
So he's the one that's in charge of getting that, keeping it going. And it's a very creative way to do things, quite different than regular conferences.
Sounds very interesting.
Well, let's have our skit today.
Welcome to another edition of Corporate Champions, the show that puts a spotlight on leaders in the business world. I'm your host, Sandy Beach. And today, we have corporate attorney Chase Money. Welcome, Chase.
My pleasure to be here, Sandy. Love your show.
Thank you, Chase. Your firm specializes in corporate law, especially intellectual property and patents. How is that business?
Very lucrative, Sandy. We're having a banner year. Lawsuits have increased by 100%, and I'm one happy attorney.
Why are there so many lawsuits, Chase?
There are some really creative people in the world, Sandy. Folks like Jay Cho, Johnny Shi, and Chris Anderson. Luminaries in their fields. They make things. But the problem is, so many others copy what they do. That's why my business is so good.
So this has a lot to do with copyright laws and stealing ideas, yes?
Unfortunately. Well, I guess I should say, fortunately for me. There are many copycats who subsist in this world by copying others. My clients deploy me to pursue these cheap imitators.
Is there any way to prevent creative people from having their ideas stolen and copied in the future?
Nearly impossible, Sandy. Another problem is that many of the laws that prevent piracy and copyright violations have been diluted, thus weakening their impact.
What's been your biggest case so far? this year, Chase?
Coffee shops. My client, Joe's Java, opened up 3 very successful coffee houses in downtown. The very next week, 3 Degree Java opened up 6 coffee houses right next to their locations, looking remarkably the same from the signs to the memorabilia sold in the shops.
How did you handle this case?
I made a significant contribution to the mayor's re-election campaign, and now they're closed.
Well, I think we'll finish right there. Thank you, Chase Money, for being my guest.
Delightful to be here, Sandy.
Listeners, join us next time for another edition of Corporate Champions.
Well, we've had a lot of interesting discussion and some of the big words were used in that skit, but we do hope that you've enjoyed reading about these people. But remember, you too can be creative.
That's right. So get out there, try some new things, and try to be creative and doing what you like. Maybe you'll find out that you are very creative in many different areas.
And I know some of the vocabulary in this article was definitely a little harder, and so congratulations on making it through. I'm sure you've underlined a lot of extra words, and if you want some more information or to discuss it further, please visit studioclassroom.com. You can check out English Corner and post some questions there, or just view the topic talks.
And check out the Facebook sometimes, too.
That's right. And stay connected with us. We like that. And I'm sure you're learning more each day. I really like this on business today.
So thank all of you panelists for being here, and thank all of you in the audience. We hope that you'll be with us every day as we study together in our advanced class. So goodbye for now.
Goodbye.